Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate. My name is Chris Evans. Today, my guests are Dr. Carson Felkel, MD of Psychiatry. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Thank you for being here. You're also the head of behavioral health at Bonsecours St. Francis.
Yes, that's right.
And we also have Alex Garvey, the vice president of mission for Bonsecours. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
It's my pleasure. We are going to talk about human trafficking, which I know is a sensitive subject, but I'm going to start with the question that I normally open with, which is just sort of an introduction to the audience, what you do and who you do it for. Dr. Felkel, tell us what you do and who you do it for.
Sure. So I'm a psychiatrist. I see child, adolescents, and adults. And I also integrate behavioral health over at Bonsecours into primary and specialty care. In terms of human trafficking, we have a lot of community partnerships, and we make sure to take care of these survivors' mental and physical needs.
And some of our listeners will recognize some of the partners that you work with in the community because they've been on this program before. Switch SC, I know, is one that's very involved in this. Jasmine Road, I think, is still kind of a fledgling organization, been around a year, year and a half maybe. And you work with both of those?
So there's both a state and an upstate human trafficking task force, and so we participate in those.
Good.
And we partner very closely with Jasmine Road. They have a housing first model.
Yes.
And so we make sure that we take care of all of those women's medical needs.
Now, Alex, you are the VP of Mission, Vice President of Mission for Bonsecours. What does that mean?
Yeah, Chris, thanks. That's a great question, actually, a question I get a lot. And I guess the best way to describe it is we as a faith-based ministry are always concerned that we are responding to the gospel message. So we believe that the gospel message is alive and that it calls us into ministry. And that ministry is to work in collaboration with local communities to make sure that we respect the dignity and we take care of the people that God puts in our lives. So, for example, different markets will call for different responses. So as the VP of Mission, I kind of do an assessment of the market, talk to the local community ministries that are available, talk to the local state and federal agencies, and talk to our partners not only the behavioral, but also on the physical components of healing. And then we create a pathway for that local ministry that will best engage God's people. And I've got a great team that I work with, and delighted to do it every day.
Good. Now, I'm certain that there are some people in our audience that are going, wait a minute, faith-based ministry, I thought St. Francis was a hospital. And you are, I mean, and then some. This is a faith-based hospital, as you said. Talk about the sort of the origins of Bonsecours and the ministry that you guys provide.
Sure, fantastic. Delighted to. So again, on that same call and response of the gospel message, 86 years ago, when the culture was changing in South Carolina, moving away from an agrarian culture into a more industrial culture, a lot of people had left the farms to come to the mill villages, which surround our community at the moment, to work in the middle jobs. And healthcare was an issue. And two Franciscan nuns, two sisters came and set up a little shop here. And in the first 2 days, they delivered a baby and they helped a young lady with appendicitis. They felt it was a call, God's call, to respond to the market. So they came to meet that physical need. It became very evident as they were here that there was a greater need, physical need. So at that time, they became advocates for housing, social components of health, which we know all play into the well-being of people, education, and just generally taking care, if you can imagine, of the person as a whole person, rather than just taking care of an illness. And I would say that this model of holistic or overall care of the key person that's a component of the community that has permeated right through to today, where we still look at how can we make, basically our question is, how can we as people of faith make the communities that we live in a better place for all of God's people? And that's not something we do alone by any means. We do it as part of a community collaboration, but we need to take charge and say, what can we do together to make this place a better place?
86 years, I believe you said.
Amen.
And I got to say, that was not just a very concise history of St. Francis, but a concise history of the upstate South Carolina. You guys really have been a part of the community for nearly 100 years now.
Absolutely. And we feel that. And we feel a responsibility to the community. And we feel that the community expects us to respond when there's a crisis in need. So again, it's the gospel message. The community has come to trust us. And we have been there for them. And we hope to continue to be there with them, God willing, into the next 100 years.
I understand. All right. Now, let's talk about the subject that we're here to talk about, human trafficking. This has been... at risk of minimalizing it, a bit of a buzzword in media recently that that there's a lot of things going on with human trafficking. But I happen to know, again, from having talked to other organizations, that this is a big problem, not just all over the world, but here in South Carolina. Dr. Felkel, talk a little bit about the nature of human trafficking, what it is, and what you guys are trying to do about it.
So to Alex's point, one of the reasons we feel like as a health system, we need to be right in the middle of this work is because this tears at human dignity. Mm-hmm. And because... our health system, Bon Secours St. Francis, is all about treating humans with dignity and making sure that our community is healthier. We must be changing this crisis we have around human trafficking. Hundreds of women in the upstate are enslaved illegally due to this condition. It's the most underreported crime. And men, either due to trauma bonding, fear of police or the health system, they just don't come forward. And even when they do, sometimes they don't even recognize the fact that they are being trafficked. So this is a really underreported issue that's very complex, has a lot of trauma, and absolutely needs a medical system to take care of behavioral health needs.
Now, that's interesting. You mentioned trauma bonding. I want you to expand on that a little bit, because it's a term I think a lot of people are not going to be familiar with. What do you mean by trauma bonding?
Right. So what happens is a woman or a man, they could be susceptible based on their history. Maybe they've had some abuse, or they've been in the foster care system, or they may have substance use disorders. Either way, there's a lot of trauma that has typically happened. And you, as human beings, we seek community, mm-hmm. and we form attachments to those around us. And unfortunately, sometimes that attachment can be with your perpetrator.
So they're actually forming an emotional bond with their abuser, and that makes it less likely that they're going to leave the situation that they're
Absolutely,
in.
That's right.
Gotcha. You also mentioned fear of the police, and I thought this was really interesting. I've talked with this with some other guests that until relatively recently, the police tended to view prostitution, human trafficking in general, and prostitution in particular, as a crime rather than a victimization. You know, that they were treating the people who were committing that act as instigators of it rather than victims of it. And I gather that that is a perception that is changing in law enforcement recently.
I think it is, just from, you know, I'm not in law enforcement, but having heard them. You know, 90% of women that we would say, quote unquote, are prostituting themselves, they're being trafficked.
Right.
So there's a lot of recognition coming to what
it's
actually
is
going on.
It's not their ideas to be doing what they're doing.
Right. And so, you know, I'm so excited for this third annual symposium.
Yes.
Last year, we spoke about the illusion of choice. When you're facing either hard jail time or being raped or molested by a family member, living on the streets, or being trafficked, that's not a choice that one
right.
can make.
Right.
We sometimes refer to this as survival trafficking.
Yes. Well, and we do want to talk about the third annual Human Trafficking Symposium that's coming up on August 23rd. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But the idea that you just mentioned of human trafficking being a choice is I think, something that gets used as almost a defense of it. And to be sure, there are locations in the United States, Nevada in particular, notably, that have legalized prostitution. And presumably, people who are participating in that are doing so by choice, especially in a legalized setting, you would think. But in places where it's illegal, clearly it's not a choice.
Yeah. Well, we know that when there's trauma has occurred at early ages, we call them critical periods, where you need your brain to develop due to safe interpersonal relationships. You have actual brain changes that I would say take away some ability to make informed consent.
Fair enough. Well, and to that point, I happen to know that a lot of this involves underage people. And so it's not just trafficking people that are of an age to consent. It's trafficking people that wouldn't even be able to consent were they given the option.
Yeah, absolutely. When dealing with minors, that's, you know, there's mandatory reporting issues. That's a definitely a more clear line that we need to call in law enforcement. We mentioned initially the fear of law enforcement, but there's also fear of healthcare.
Okay.
Which, you know, we are healthcare here, and I just want to name kind of this fact that when these men and women go into the emergency room, they may not say that they're being trafficked, even though there's some red flags there. So in addition to the symposium, one of the pieces that Bonscourt St. Francis is working on under the guidance of Alex Garvey here is creating a video to show what it actually looks like for women to enter your emergency department that are being trafficked. This is going to be a first view for healthcare to see what it actually looks like. There's a lot of red flags that we miss.
That's really interesting, the idea of being afraid of healthcare, because you think, as Alex was talking about, the mission to serve the public and to make sure that people are healing, you know, as whole people, not just healing an illness, but healing a person, that they would want to seek help from healthcare. But I happen to know, it was interesting, I had an off-the-air conversation with one of the other guests, and I mentioned being a blood donor, which I do on a regular basis, and one of the screening questions, actually several of the screening questions, regarded having traded money or drugs for sex. And I was making a kind of a joke out of it and saying, oh, you know, isn't it strange that they ask this kind of thing on the screening? I understand from a medical perspective why you would need to check that sort of thing, because there are certain risk factors involved. But she saw that as an opportunity to reach victims. And I thought that was really fascinating. And I wonder if there are similar opportunities for people in healthcare like yourselves to reach out to victims in places that you might not be able to otherwise recognize them.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. That's a great opportunity. And in the emergency room, we frequently ask about, you know, using substances. But if we could just follow it up with the question of what type of work do you do and how do you pay for that, you know, the drugs, we can open doors to figure out, you know what, they're actually, you know, having to turn a trick, quote unquote,
right,
in order to fund this substance use disorder.
Habit. Well, and that seems like a way that people, you talked about the trauma bonding and the emotional attachment that people form with their captors or their abusers at any rate. And that's another hook, I think, that keeps people in the position that they're in, is if they've gotten addicted to a substance and the only way that they know of to get it is by doing this, then they might seem more like willing participants.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what we mean by survival trafficking. You
right.
have substance use disorder, and in order to pay for it, you could steal.
Sure, yeah.
But if you steal, you know, $3,000 worth of material, you're probably only going to get $300 for it. Or you could unfortunately turn some tricks to fund your condition. And so as healthcare, and especially in the emergency department, we just want to plant that seed that we're a safe place for whenever a male or female is willing to talk about what's going on, we are there for you.
Let's talk about this third annual human trafficking symposium that you've got coming up August 23rd. Am I remembering that correctly, Alex?
Yep.
Okay, good. Tell us what this symposium is.
Okay, so that's fantastic. So, Chris, the best way to frame it is I always say that we as a healthcare system are not the Calvary. So we're not coming to save the day. But something that we do really well is that collaboration that we have shown to the community, our care in the past 86 years, we want to magnify that to bring our partners on board. So, for example, you talked about law enforcement. So we have an understanding with our local federal law enforcement that anybody brought to the attention who we claim to have been rescued, if they go into any type of program, there's going to be no prosecution. They understand that these women are victimized in this. And the next
so it takes
thing,
away that fear of law enforcement.
We try to remove it, and Dr. Falkell said it so well.
Mitigates it
exactly,
okay.
Because it's instilled by the people that control them that we are not a safe place where
not to be trusted.
Falkell, not to be trusted, and as Dr. Falkell said, we are that place that can be trusted. But what the human trafficking, the third annual symposium, really does is this. If I can give you a quick story,
please.
So.
Love stories.
Oh, stories are great. So last year, we had the opportunity to come once again and speak on the radio and share and use some media to let people know of the resources that are coming up. We also have another community program in Bonscourt St. Francis Health System. We're really proud of where we bring people on a disability spectrum and give them access to work and work employment. And I spoke to one of the fathers there, and he said something really good. He said, Alex, I heard you on the radio. And he said, I was driving along, turned it up, and he said, you said something that made me realize what I saw. I said, okay, expand on that a little bit. He goes, I was in a gas station last week in Greenville. He said, 7 o'clock in the evening, pumping gas in my own world, whatever way I looked, I said, I saw these four young girls get out of a minivan and get into a car. And he said, the only thing that came to my mind was those young girls are dressed very inappropriately for an evening. They look like they're going clubbing. And he said, I was thinking to myself, what parent would let these kids out dressed like that? And he goes, but it was when I heard the interview, now I know what I actually saw. So that's what we're hoping this symposium will do. Originally, we'd set out for people that have direct involvement with children. So we had originally done the first one for school teachers, counselors, pastors, community members, advocates and stuff like that. But now we have got to the stage where we've opened it to the whole public because we say that unless everybody recognizes the signs and symptoms of what somebody who's been trafficked looked like, unless we as whole community will recognize this, then we'll never be able to alleviate the problem.
You know, I feel moved to tell a story of my own that is very similar to the one you just told, and I'll try and make it short. A while ago, I had a different job. My job was driving a taxi, a long distance taxi for freight train crews. And I, one of the things that I had to do when we returned from a trip is gas up the van and then put it back in the parking lot for the next person to use whenever they had a trip. I was pumping gas into the van, and this was in the middle of May, but it was one of those cold snaps that we get around here where it's been we actually just had one recently, I think a week or two ago, and it's been really nice, even warm, and then the temperature just plummets, and I was not prepared for it. I was dressed, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt, and it was probably in the 50s outside, and luckily I was going to be able to get back in the car, but this woman approached me. And she was young, not underage, but probably college age, I would guess. And she asked if she could have a ride, and I said, look, I'm sorry, this is a company vehicle. I'm not supposed to drive it anywhere. I'm not supposed to have passengers other than our clients. I'm not supposed to drive it anywhere than back to the train station. And she told me the story about she was trying to meet her friends, and they had not come to pick her up. And she was going to go to a party or to a bar or something with them and just needed to get there. And I refused and refused and finally said, look, I'm going to the train station. It's right over there. If that gets you closer to where you need to go, I'll be happy to drive you that far. But I can't go anywhere else. There's a GPS in the vehicle. They'll know if I've gone anywhere. And she said, that's fine. So we got – and again, she was dressed like she was going out, not dressed for the weather. And I felt sorry for her because she was cold. And she got in the car and I started making conversation with her. And I said, so what are you doing out here? Why are you out here? You know, what happened with your friends? And she said, oh, I'm just out here trying to make some money. And that should have been a clue, but I missed the signal and completely oblivious said, oh, yeah, doing what? And she gave me this look, this withering look, like, come on, you know what's going on here. And I had that sort of peripatetic moment of, oh, goodness, I've accidentally picked up a prostitute. And instantly my head was filled with questions like, how do you wind up in this situation? What, you know, why are you here? What are you doing? But I think as soon as she realized that she wasn't going to get anything out of me, she asked to be let out and kind of went on her way. But I didn't realize until the very end of the conversation exactly what was going on. And it can be that subtle.
Absolutely. So if I could paint a healthcare kind of picture with you, I would say there was a time in our history, and I'm talking about healthcare in general, when people would present themselves to the emergency room with obvious signs of domestic violence.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
The marks, the bruises and stuff like that. And be it whatever, without a structure to recognize it and without a follow-up to say there's a system in place for help and healing, our brothers and sisters were just treated and left go. Now, it's safe to say that we were very aware of the signs and the symptoms of domestic violence. And when somebody presents with those, we take action as a healing ministry in collaboration with community partners to make sure that there's justice and healing.
Well, and I would even say to a society, not just people, professionals in the industry, but everybody is aware of those signs and symptoms. I mean, there's been so much made of the problem of domestic violence that people know in general, what to look for.
Absolutely. And so wouldn't it be perfect if we could raise that same level of awareness for our brothers and sisters who are being human trafficked? And that's one of the keys of the symposium, to get everybody on board.
So that's what the symposium is about. Let's talk about some of the guests that you've got coming up. John F. Clark president and CEO of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Tell us about him.
Fantastic speaker. If anybody is interested in any of the speakers, they've all either got TED Talks or they also got YouTube Talks online. We're really delighted to have Mr. Clark because we've been assured he doesn't do a lot of speaking engagements, but he's really aligned with the ministry. He's given us very positive feedback, and his committee has, that a healthcare system is tackling this head on, and he wants to make sure his agency is a part of it. And he is, of course, part of that national organization. So to bring somebody of his and the other speakers' calibers into light in the Greenville market is just phenomenally big for us. These are part of the benefit is bringing speakers of this caliber in is the people that work in our sister agencies that you've heard Dr. Falkell and I talk about, they can come and they can be enriched by these levels of speakers. So really top quality, top line speakers.
We've also got John C. Richmond, Ambassador at Large for the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons. Now that title smacks of government agency. Is it a state, if not a federal agency? Is that correct?
Federal agency.
Okay.
So, you know, we say all ministry, like all politics, is local, right? We heal individually. But the only way we can change systematically is when we change as a society, and what governs our societies are our laws. So by putting legislation in place that not only protects and defends the dignity of the human person, but also gives our local law enforcement agency the ability and the teeth to implement some procedures, that's very important. So to have that national federal recognition is really big for us.
We've also got Sister Ann Victory, Education Director for the Collaborative to End Trafficking. Tell us about her.
Sister's a wonderful, a sweet, and a powerhouse of a lady. Sweet lady to talk to. She's a gentle giant with a strong demeanor. She's done international work with the Vatican at an international level about trafficking over borders. And she is a spokeswoman for the collaboration of religious women, which we call sisters in the Catholic faith tradition, and how they have primarily, through education and hospitals, taken this on and front and foremost. And she's really good.
And also Dr. Carson Falkell, tell us who he is.
Oh, yeah. Well, that guy's sitting right next to me. And let me tell you, if the hairs don't stand on your back after Dr. Falkell speaks, he will show you step by step how powerful the mind is controlled by these manipulators. Dr. Falkell.
Yeah, you know, we're learning that you can't prosecute your way out of this crisis. You can't house your way out of it. You can't medicate your way out. We need everyone in Greenville and beyond to be there to hear this message of how we can all partner together. There's true brain development changes from trauma. We're learning more about the adverse childhood experiences. Every school system in this country should be looking at trauma because it shapes the rest of your life, even your physical health. We're going to even talk about identity disturbance. This is a new concept. When these women are forced to take new names, they truly change a part of their identity.
Wow.
And we need to know about that.
Yeah. If people want to attend this symposium on August 23rd, what do they need to do? Do we have to register? Is it ticketed? Or how do people get involved?
Well, we have a Eventbrite link out. If you just want to Google search Bon Secours St.
Francis
Eventbrite.
I did this. Eventbrite, Bon Secours, and the first result was the third symposium on human trafficking.
Yes, click that link. It's free admission. And,
okay.
And if you're in the medical profession or clinical, there's free CME, CEUs. So that's a great opportunity to come because those can be expensive.
Where is this going to happen?
Free. At the Wellness Arena,
at the Bon Secours Wellness Arena. Well, of course, why not? You got your name on it, you may as well use it.
Which it's really interesting that they've been so wonderful to work with. And it's interesting that we're holding it at an arena because it is arena events like football games that actually create some of these issues.
I've heard that. That especially the Super Bowl, deserved or not, gets a reputation for being the most trafficked event in the nation. Real quickly, before we run out of time here, because we are out of time, if people recognize this sort of victimization and or are a part of the victimization, what do they need to do to get help?
Right. So if you're recognizing it, you know, there's several things you can do. There's a national crisis line, and you can always call 911 if you spot something that just doesn't feel right. If you feel like you are being victimized, we have tremendous help in our emergency department. Go there and just say you need help.
Just go to the emergency room.
We will be there to help you. Or call 911, of course.
Of course. Gotcha. Dr. Carson Felkel, Doctor of Psychiatry and Head of Behavioral Health at Bon Secours St. Francis, and also Alex Garvey, the Vice President of Mission for Bon Secours St. Francis, have been my guests today. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
It's been my pleasure. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.